It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Hey, here's Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. Steven Brown is at C2E2 this weekend. So if you're going to C2E2, stop by the Chimeras Comics booth, and Steven will be willing to sell you things and talk to you for as long as you want to be talked to. This weekend is also the premiere of Daredevil Season 2 on Netflix, and this is really exciting. The first season of Daredevil was possibly the best superhero television show ever made. We reviewed it at the time, and I remember saying how it made Gotham look silly. And then in the year that preceded, Gotham got more and more silly. But it was an incredible experience for 13 episodes with Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. And this year, it looks like it might even top last year with Jon Bernthal as the Punisher. Punisher's gotten two movies, and I feel like this will get it right. I personally have always loved the Punisher as a villain. I can't sympathize with him enough as a hero to really read his own book. But I love it when he's up against a hero who preserves life, like Daredevil does. So we're going to do things a little differently. I'm going to try to watch all 13 episodes this weekend. At some point, I will also like to get to C2E2, but mostly I want to binge watch this show and finish it. Steven's not going to be able to touch it until after the convention's over, so it's just going to be me. The way we're going to do this is I'm going to talk to you after every episode. So what we're going to do this week is 13 mini-episodes. Now, you don't have to download a bunch of episodes. We'll just come in and come out. I'll give a musical cue, and we'll talk about each episode in turn. If I can find somebody who is up to date on an episode with me, I'll talk to somebody else. But otherwise, I think a couple minutes for each episode will be good. But I'm really looking forward to it, so let me just sign into Netflix. Episode 1. Okay, these are going to be knee-jerk reactions. The credits are still running. The really interesting gave away a little more than I expected, and although still took its time, we kind of open on the new status quo. Nelson and Murdoch have a lot of clients, but they have no money. We see Daredevil stopping muggings in the street. We get the impression that things have kind of gone on for the last year the way they've gone on. It seems like the same amount of time has passed. Obviously, Jessica Jones has happened in between because we're living in the same universe. Age of Ultron has probably happened. So what I found interesting about this was this show knows exactly what it is. It knows its tone so strongly compared to other shows. It's not as over the top as Gotham, but it's not as stripped down and realistic as The Wire. It hits a very particular note right in the middle. And we've been through three showrunners on this show, from Stephen S. DeKnight to Drew Goddard to now Doug Petrie. All three of the showrunners have written for Joss Whedon. So we have that direct tie in to Avengers and the Marvel Universe through talent. But this show is confident in its characters. It's confident in its tone. We build up the Punisher through the entire episode. Of course, we're going to get into spoilers. Ballsy move, premiering this the day after St. Patrick's Day and wiping out an entire Irish mob who are the most Irish New York Irish can get. There's piles of corned beef on a table in this. We see the Punisher kill every one of them. And then we see the detective work, the lawyer work that Nelson and Murdoch do. And then it isn't until the very, very end, and I didn't think it was going to show him at all. We barely see Jon Bernthal as the Punisher. We see him in silhouette coming to do an assassination in a hospital. And we see him in silhouette. We hear the gunshots. We see his feet. We're cutting around him. And then And Karen gets the victim out, gets him in a car, and he starts shooting the car. So we know he's an excellent marksman. We know it's not one of those villains who just shoots blindly and they just get away. And right before he's about to assassinate the guy, there's a fight between Daredevil and Punisher, which was handled really well because it wasn't like he just missed. Punisher is not a guy who misses, which is going to be tough if he decides to kill Daredevil, which in the at the end of the episode kind of looks like he does. The one close-up we get of John Bernthal, he says bang, shoots Daredevil right in the head. Daredevil goes over the side. That's the end of this episode. I haven't watched episode two. Obviously, he's not dead, but let's go watch episode two. It's getting really clear now that we're in the second episode that the Punisher is not a superhero team-up in the way that Avengers is with Daredevil. Punisher is not even the villain the way the Kingpin was. Punisher is the monster. This episode is laid out like a horror movie where people are talking about the Punisher. Everyone is terrified of him. He has very little screen time. There is a great scene where he shows up at a pawn shop, very much like Terminator, the original Terminator, but goes a little farther. Where he buys some equipment and then the porn dealer offers him kiddie porn and then he walks to the door and turns the sign from open to closed. That's a great moment. Daredevil is having a hard time recovering from the fight in the first episode, which makes him even weaker in the second episode. We see more Melvin Potter after Punisher has shot Daredevil in the face. The helmet is cracked, which reminds me of Batman Begins when Alfred smashes them with a hammer and says they're fragile. Daredevil is going back into battle weakened. Unfortunately, by the end of the episode, we kind of get the same thing as the first one. We're all scared of the Punisher. There's a victim who Foggy and Karen are trying to get into the witness protection program, and the feds are trying to use his bait against the Punisher. Daredevil is brought out. And again, we have another fight between them that Daredevil loses because he's weaker. And we end on Foggy looking very concerned, which is how we open the episode. I'm slightly concerned that we'll get into redundant territory. There was that feeling with Jessica Jones where as the episodes went on, it was a little more episodic, and I said on that podcast, Jessica Jones would have been great if it was 8 episodes, because they tended to repeat a lot of the same dramatic romance, which is okay if you're doing a weekly show. It's kind of okay to embrace the formula. X-Files did it perfectly. Star Trek did it very well, where going into the fourth act, kind of what it's going to be, but what's the spin on it this week, and you're returning to a show for its familiarity. Netflix can't play by these rules because they know we're binge-watching it. They know many, many people are watching it like I am, pausing it to talk to you, going back to watch the next episode. So I'm really hoping at this point we're not just going to get a lot of face-offs between Punisher and Daredevil. I want to know more about the Punisher's backstory. I want to get some dialogue between the two of them. I want the characters to face off as well as physically fight. We also know Elektra is coming, so I'm also hoping if the Punisher story starts to become redundant, maybe the Elektra storyline will come in or change things. Right now, still think it's great, as good as season one. Wondering if there's trepidation on my part or if I'm starting to see the cracks in the formula. Let's do episode 3. One of the nice things about doing this in real time while I'm binging it is sometimes I get exactly what I was asking for. Episode 3 is incredible. You need the buildup of 1 and 2 to get to it, but episode 3 is everything I was just talking about. We open with Daredevil strapped to a chimney in chains, which is one of the poster images they teased, and the Punisher watching over him. We get a lot of these two characters. They bounce off each other so well. The way Charlie Cox and John Bernthal argue, it feels very real, very naturalistic, very in the moment, and aggressive. Both of these characters are portrayed more deeply and either one was in their feature films. This is exactly what we want. And the action is intense. We get their diverting philosophies clashing up one against each other. We get a fight scene at the end of this episode that is not just Daredevil versus the Punisher yet again. We get a fight scene that tops the hallway fight from episode 2 in season 1. That incredible fight where he takes on 10 guys. This time, Daredevil is in an injured mask that we see from episode 2. It's got a weld scar in the middle of it. It just looks freakishly scary. And he's got a gun duct taped to one hand because Punisher wants him to shoot people and kill. And then he's got a chain in the other, which is the chain that he was tied up with. And he fights, I don't know, 25 guys through an entire building. It's like a condensed version of the movie Dread with Carl Urban. He goes all the way down this building fighting bikers without killing. It's amazing. It seems like it's one shot. There's a lot of cheats. It's very easy to see when they fade to black and moments where cuts were, which also makes the fight somewhat hard to follow here and there, that there are lights flickering on and off when he's in certain situations, so you can't quite see the fight connect from one to another sometimes. But it's amazing. It's maybe... yeah, it's the best fight in Daredevil so far. It beats the two big fights in season one. The hallway fight, which we mentioned, and the fight with the Kingpin in the final episode. It looks great. The other thing I want to mention is Daredevil's costume looks better. And it looked horrible in the first season. No one liked it. I thought they would redesign it. If they did, it's slight tweaks in the way Michael Keaton's suit was tweaked from Batman to Batman Returns. You can only really tell if you're looking at them both. But it's lit better. It's lit more red and black. We're not getting that weird purple we were getting in the first season. So he's easier to watch while he's fighting, which is a big deal. This is great. Let's do episode 4. Now, this is where watching these in real time actually hurts. There's no way to deal with hindsight. This is a big episode in that it wraps up a couple of storylines and kicks off a new one. Without seeing the rest of the season, I don't know how big a change that is. This episode really finishes off the Punisher arc. Is Jon Bernthal coming back for the rest of the season? I don't know. But we get an episode that has a lot to do, and it's the longest one so far. This one's an hour. Most of them have been about 48 to 50 minutes, and it hurts it. The pacing is slow. They've changed from a horror movie to more of a mob revenge movie. The Punisher is more sympathetic, and I feel like there's a lot of tributes to John Wick or the Boondock Saints or State of Grace, some of the Irish mob movies. The Irish mobsters are very Irish, and they're so Irish, I don't know if I'm offended by how Irish they are. And the Punisher tries to have a resolution with them. He gets captured. He gets tortured. This is as close as we'll probably see to a Punisher series. Unless people go crazy and want Jon Bernthal to be the Punisher in a Netflix series, which I don't want to see. I think we've got just the right amount of him. As I said in the beginning of this podcast, I like him playing off other heroes. I don't need him by himself. And we do get Daredevil coming in. We get a lot of Punisher alone. But when Punisher gets revenge, Daredevil steps in and keeps it from being too violent, which might have been kind of a cap on Marvel's part to not go too far over the top and go further than the Daredevil show would do. But it also brings our main hero into the story, or otherwise this would just be a Punisher. We get a really nice monologue. The Punisher's very injured and leans up against a tombstone and kind of tells his origin to Daredevil. It's good, it's long, but it is good, and Jon Bernthal is really good in it, and it reminded me how much better an actor he is than when he played Shane on The Walking Dead, who is a character that I felt kind of one note, and it's nice to see that's mostly the character and not necessarily the performance. But his arc feels closed. I mean, he's sent off to jail on a stretcher. Is that the end of him? Will we see a Punisher on trial? Will he escape? I don't know, because I'm trying to remain as spoiler-free as possible. We also we get to pay off to the romantic subplot with Karen Page. I don't know whether shippers really caring about it. I felt it was inevitable, not only being a comic fan and knowing that she was a love interest for so many different runs of that series and expecting them to get together just so it was canon, but also she's the only girl on the show and they've been playing with the romantic tension through the entire first season. So we pay that off. But then the nice sting at the end is the very last shot is Elektra. So now we may be going into an Elektra arc. We certainly are going into an Elektra story, whether the Punisher is now finished and now we are dealing with Elektra, or the two will mix together. I don't know. Again, the way we usually do these is we watch the whole series and podcast about the whole series. So this is an experiment in a number of ways. So let's see what episode 5 has to say. Episode 5 now, we're laying a lot of track for the rest of the season. The Punisher is still involved because we are following three subplots through this without one of them really taking over the main plot. Each one of our characters has a different agenda. So Matt Murdock is about Elektra. So we get a flashback into Elektra, who's a much more interesting character than Jennifer Garner was in the feature film, but still not quite the frenetic, wild, violent character that Frank Miller gave us in the books. She's posh, she's slick, she's calculating, she's manipulative, and she's dangerous. But I don't get the sense that she's out of control. We also don't see her fight in this episode. It looks like episode 6 that will happen, but we don't get the physical side of Elektra. She's interesting. She's a lot more Mediterranean. Sounds a little Australian, not quite Greek, but certainly not, you know, the white bread of Jennifer Garner. And the episodes between Matt and Elektra play a lot better than Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner in a playground on a seesaw. Meanwhile, Karen is following up on the Punisher. So we get callbacks to Ben Urich's paper, the New York Bulletin, which was supposed to be the Daily Bugle in the comics, but at that point they hadn't made the deal with Sony. I was curious to see if now we're in a post-Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe world, if that would change. No, it's still Ben Urich's editor at the New York Bulletin, and she's doing research on Punisher and finding his backstory. So John Bernthal is going to come back. In fact, spoiler for myself, when Netflix loaded up episode 6, there was a shot of John Bernthal in a hospital bed. So the Punisher is not gone, which I am happy to say. There are a few loose ends from his story. You know, who killed his family, which may never be resolved, but also how he was shot in the head, died for a minute, and came back. That's not explained at all, and that could easily be explained with a kind of Marvel Cinematic Universe superpower. And then Foggy's subplot is with Reyes, who I haven't mentioned now because I haven't been interested in Reyes. Reyes is working for the DA and is an obstacle in the way of what Nelson and Murdock need to get done legally. So she's been causing problems for the legal firm. I'm not terribly interested in that. There is that, you know, that little shot of Law and Order, Boston Legal, going on in Daredevil because they're lawyers. I've never been kind of tuned into lawyer shows, so I feel like that's kind of due diligence that you have to do. The one interesting thing about Reyes is that in a scene where we bring back another character whose name we don't remember from season 1, she gives us the backstory that Reyes is looking to become the mayor, and which is why she's being so aggressive and has such an agenda. The interesting thing there is in that scene, we name check Jessica Jones, which means this takes place after Jessica Jones season one, and it reinforces that the Netflix universe is a unified whole. But even more importantly, it sounds like Reyes wants to run for mayor on an anti-superhero platform, which means she's going after Jessica Jones, which we may see in season two of her show, and says she's going to go after Daredevil. What's interesting about that is that really tees up the sentiment that we're going into for Captain America Civil War, which will be the next Marvel film. So again, Marvel does a nice job, even though, as I was saying last week on our podcast, the movies and the television shows are not as mixed as we like to believe. There is nice name checking and there is nice shifting of tone to reflect everything that Marvel's doing in a given year. Other than that, nothing really too huge. No major developments, more the setting of the character for Elektra. That's going to be important, and let's see what happens in episode 6. So in episode 6, right about the time we think we're just going to keep developing our main storylines, we have this big diversion. Which is interesting. We have a shift of tone where Daredevil and Elektra go on this espionage mission to get facts about Roxxon Oil and Hell's Kitchen, and the Yakuza are involved, but they're not quite the Yakuza. Maybe they're the Hand. And it's kind of like they name check a lot of things in the Daredevil universe, but mostly what they're doing is a version of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that is better than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This feels like a James Bond episode. It feels like a lot of Casino Royale where the stakes are higher, where in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's always kind of a lightness to it. It made me think of episodes where Coulson and Melinda May would go undercover, but they would end up ballroom dancing, and these Elektra and Daredevil end up having simulated sex and beating people up. It's a good episode. I don't know that it's that necessary, but it is nice that this far into the series we can play with the tone a little bit. Season one was a straight shot about Kingpin and Daredevil. When we got diversions, they were Daredevil's origin, like talking about Stick or talking about his father. And this is kind of playing with the universe a little bit, which is nice. The subplot is great. It's a whole the Punisher subplot here is all about Nelson and Murdoch taking over Frank Castle's case and defending him, which is a really interesting proposition of Daredevil actually defending the Punisher. And Foggy gets him down to a plea deal, which the Punisher rejects in the best verbal Punisher way ever. The only way it could be more Punisher is if he actually murdered all of the lawyers and the federal court officers that were in the room. Getting interesting. We are about halfway through the series, so this is binge watching at its finest, because this is still the first day for me. And I'll talk to you in a minute about episode 7. Last episode, I said how interesting it was that they weren't just moving the plots forward, that they were experimenting. This episode, they're just moving the plots forward. We have some trial business. We have some Elektra business. The two are tied together because Elektra is complicating the Punisher trial. We don't really get anything of the Punisher. We get a lot of talk about him, but it's really they're selecting jurors and holding objections. There's a lot of courtroom drama stuff going on, a lot of semantics. I thought the biggest theme of this was we get just this fight scene with Elektra and Daredevil and some thugs trying to figure out what the Yakuza are doing. And what happens is they, at the end of the episode, they go into the building and there's a bottomless hole in the middle of the floor. And that's what I thought of this episode. There was a lot of stuff going around, but there didn't seem to be any core to it. But, you know, we've got to move the ball forward. So let's just go to episode 8. Twice it did this to me. After episode two, I said, well, not much has happened. And then episode 3 was the best episode, with Punisher capturing Daredevil and Daredevil fighting his way out of a building. did the same thing. I was just complaining about how in episode 7, not much happens. Episode 8 has everything that Daredevil ever had. It was like 50 minutes of Frank Miller completely crystallized. We had the hand. Stick came back. We had the Punisher on trial and freaking out. We had the hand attacking Matt in his room. We had all the backstory. And then, after all of it, we have Elektra murdering someone in cold blood. After all of it, we get, and obviously we're in spoilers, we're on episode 8. The Kingpin is in this! The Kingpin is back! Vincent D'Onofrio is in this! This was incredible! This was like the best Daredevil movie you could ever imagine. I'm just gonna stop talking and turn on episode 9! Episode 9 was kind of everything at once. As it started, it seemed to be just kind of laying track for the rest of the series. At first, it seemed like it was going to be a flashback of what happened to Kingpin between season 1 and season 2, but they managed to do that in about 8 minutes. And then we spend some time moving Karen Page's story ahead, whether we're making her a journalist, she's becoming more of an investigator, we break up Nelson and Murdoch, we make things really bad for Matt, we estrange him from Elektra, and then we make this shift that's really interesting, where the Punisher and Kingpin are in prison together. And we're at a point now with superhero movies and television where we've seen just about everybody. I mean, there's a Deadpool movie. You know, Negasonic Teenage Warhead is in that movie. We're beyond the point where just seeing a comic book character as a human on screen gives me a thrill. And yet, seeing Punisher and Kingpin fight each other in a prison totally floored me. I was giddy. It's also one of the most violent prison shows I've ever seen. There's a prison fight that has a body count like The Walking Dead. This episode goes crazy, and the only detriment to that is that Daredevil is the least interesting character in his own show now. Whether or not those tables will turn as we go on, we'll see. But really, Daredevil goes deeper into figuring out what the hand is, and there's ninja fights, and there's people forcibly donating blood into a tank, which is going into a weird coffin that is unexplained. But really, once again, like in season 1, I think is pointing us more towards Iron Fist than towards anything that's going to happen in the Daredevil series. And once again, just John Bernthal is killing it as the Punisher to the exact extent I want to see him. I don't want a Punisher show. I'm loving him. But I'm loving him as a supporting character. I feel like 13 episodes of just him would be too much. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who are listening now, if you're keeping up with me, are totally disagreeing with me, or are yelling into the air with headphones on that you want a Punisher show because he's that good. But for the same reason I don't read the book, this is as much Punisher as I want. Although, I do want to get to episode 10. Episode 10, we're moving that ball down the field again. More plot points. Not too big. Really kind of getting ready and ramping up for the end of the series, I think. There's now a mystery going on where someone is assassinating people and the Punisher is to blame and he's wrongfully accused. It's not quite as interesting. There's a lot of, protective custody for Karen, and Reyes gets killed, which is great because she was irritating. But the one centerpiece of this episode that really makes it work is that Matt goes to talk to Wilson Fisk because he knows that the Kingpin let Punisher out of prison. And that scene is fantastic. And I almost feel that if they only got D'Onofrio for like these two episodes, or really, an episode and a half of scenes. I feel like there was an effort, well, let's get him in the room with Charlie Cox and let's reunite Daredevil with the Kingpin. And man, does that work. It's a great face-off scene, but then when Fisk turns the tables and he's out of his handcuffs and he grabs Matt and he beats the hell out of him. He just slams his head into the table like it seems like a dozen times. There is this feeling that the Kingpin is more powerful than he was in the first season where he was kind of a sympathetic person. And it brought home the idea that it made me happy that Tom Holland is playing Spider-Man in Civil War, because that bell just went off in my head. It was, oh yeah, this is all one world. This is a world where there is a Spider-Man and this is Spider-Man who can interact with that Kingpin and that Daredevil and that Punisher. And though we may never see it, you know, I'm sure when the Spider-Man movie is made with Sony, he'll probably fight the Scorpion. You know, he'll probably fight a big visual classic villain that he hasn't met in any of his other movies. It won't be a gangster story. I just don't see a teenage Spider-Man doing a gangster story in the movies. So we may never see Spider-Man meet Kingpin. But that show of force that D'Onofrio gives him in that scene makes me feel that he could, and then he might not win. The other thing that's great is just the final shot. Well, there's zombie hand kids now, the kids that they rescued from the blood draining are apparently brainwashed by the hand. We don't know why yet. But then the last shot is Daredevil seeing lots of ninjas climbing up a wall, which means episode 11 will be ninja fight. And no superhero does ninja fights better than Daredevil. Batman doesn't do ninja fights as well as Daredevil. So I'm expecting episode 11. We'll be starting up some ninja fights. On a personal note, I'm going to save episode 11 for tomorrow. You'll hear my review in about 4 seconds. But I think 10 episodes is a good enough binge for one day. So I'm going to get some sleep and we'll talk about episode 11 after I watch it, which will be tomorrow. So for me, it's the next morning. I did not sleep well last night. The boys had a rough night, so I had a rough night. So I'm kind of tired and kind of impatient and kind of restless now. And episode 11 doesn't really help any of that. This is the first episode I've seen that is absolutely not moving the ball forward. I've been using that phrase a lot through this series. This one doesn't even do it. What this one does is kind of tick off all the points you want to see from Daredevil. Daredevil fights ninjas. Punisher brutally stabs people and kills a guy with a coffee pot. Karen is trying to get to the bottom of the investigation. Foggy is offered another job with the law firm, but nothing comes to any kind of resolution. Towards the end, Stick and Elektra meet and don't even fight. That's the cliffhanger of the episode. This show does a good job of balancing action with exposition, which is something that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has a problem with. That show can be very talky sometimes, and then somebody just flips somebody over a couple of times with some music, and that's all the action you get, where other episodes have a lot more. Daredevil always gives you good, strong doses of action. We get 3 or 4 big fight scenes. We get that hospital fight that we were promised last night. We open with that. But again, nothing really comes to fruition in this. All we're really doing is kind of pacing out the 13 episodes. I said this about Jessica Jones. I liked it, but I didn't think it needed 13 episodes. And it aggravated me that they did the same situation a couple of times with Kilgrave, where they almost got him and he got out and killed a bunch of people. And it didn't escalate. It didn't raise the stakes at all. It just repeated the same beat. And I feel like that's where we are. Punisher finds a guy, that he believes killed his family, but he didn't, and Daredevil stops him from killing again, and then there's a big fight. And it's probably the most expensive production values we've had so far. It's huge explosions on a boat, but it doesn't really mean anything. We're now very obsessed with this character called the Blacksmith that is running the whole show, that killed Punisher's family, and that is killed Reyes, and is probably the assassin that tried to kill Karen in the last episode. And this is where my knowledge as a comics fan kind of bothers me, because if it was an Easter egg, I'd go along with it. But the only Blacksmith I know is an X-Men character that Jeff Loeb used during his run on Cable. So it's obviously not that. And my Daredevil history is a little spotty. I've read a lot of the old Stan Lee stuff with Wally Wood and Bill Everett and John Romita, and nothing really in the 70s. I've read the Frank Miller run a few times. I read Denny O'Neill and David Mazzucchelli's run. And after Daredevil season one, I went back and read the Bendis run. And I was getting into the Brubaker run, but I started to kind of burn out on Daredevil because it was about 80 issues in 1 month. So there's a lot of runs I don't know. So I don't know if the Blacksmith is a big character that never quite crossed over into any of the other Marvel books. But we're spending a lot of time building this mystery of this character who we didn't hear about until very late in the season. And now he's the big MacGuffin. And I felt like if there were kind of some connection to the comics, I could at least sink my teeth into his identity. But right now, I don't really care. I mean, it's like the Irish mob in the beginning of the season. We thought that was going to be a big deal. And then between episode one and episode four, we got rid of all of them and we haven't seen them again. There was a biker gang that we saw for a few episodes, haven't seen them again. So we keep setting up these mobs to kind of be the obstacle, and then we just knock them off in a couple of episodes. So hearing about this Blacksmith, I'm just not interested. We do see a lot of Claire Temple in this episode, and we've seen her in the last few episodes, and I hadn't mentioned her yet. And Rosario Dawson is Claire Temple, the Night Nurse, has been the Agent Coulson of the Netflix suite of shows. She had a couple of really strong episodes in Daredevil season one, and then she came in at the end of Jessica Jones, and now she's been in a couple of episodes of Daredevil. She was very involved this episode. And it ends with the hospital trying to cover up the fact that there were zombie hand ninjas running through their hospital, and she quits, which in and of itself, all right, it's very much a Western trope. You know, it's High Noon of the sheriff throwing down the badge. I mean, she actually kicks her way into a conference room with the board of directors, who apparently sit in a windowless room in a basement, and puts her ID tag down. What makes it interesting is, because she is the connective glue of these shows, will we resolve that in this season of Daredevil, or what role will she play in Luke Cage? I'm very curious to see, because Luke Cage is going to be next. So that's it for this one. Like I said, kind of the same old, same old. It's to use a YouTube analogy, this episode is like the get on your boots of Daredevil, where when you two released Get on Your Boots, it just smelled like an attempt to recreate Vertigo, which was their last big hit on the last album. And nobody cared because they already had Vertigo and it was a better song. I feel like this episode is doing that with like three episodes a season. But there's only two left, so things should probably ramp up and we'll probably see some major things. Still enjoying the season, so I've got high hopes for episode 12 and 13. So first, let's talk about episode 12. Episode 12, we're in the second to last episode, and we're now really doing two shows. We have a Punisher plot, we have a Daredevil plot, both running, almost like this is now Tales of Suspense, where we have an Iron Man story and a Captain America story. These two aren't even connecting anymore. We're following both of them, which is kind of a problem that we're moving into the end, where Jessica Jones and Daredevil season one, we were laser focused at this point. We were barreling towards the final confrontation between Kilgrave and Jessica Jones and Kingpin and Daredevil season one. And now the Punisher story is so strong, and it's picked up Karen Page, which is now our only connection to actually a Daredevil show, is we find out who the blacksmith is, which is fairly interesting, mostly because it's Clancy Brown, and we live in a world where we can't have enough Clancy Brown. Clancy Brown is great in everything, and he's fantastic in this. And obviously, you guys are deep into spoilers. You've seen these. He is the blacksmith, and he was, in a few episodes before, he was the Punisher's commanding officer in the war, which we now mention is Afghanistan. We don't just say the war. The Marvel Universe and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is fairly close to the real world, so we weren't going to make up a fake war in Latveria. So we've grounded it. We've kind of given an age for who Punisher was. Obviously, in the books, it was Vietnam, and that's moved up the same way. Tony Stark was initially in Vietnam before the Vietnam War in the Silver Age Marvel, and that got moved up. So both stories are interesting, but I'm lessening the impact that we're this far into the season and we're just telling two stories. Foggy, who had the third plot, his story is resolved. Reyes is dead. Nelson and Murdock is done. We get really one scene with Foggy confirming that Nelson and Murdock is done. What that means for Daredevil season 3, which I'm sure there will be one, we don't know. I'm sure they'll come back in some way. But Foggy just kind of walks off stage. And again, we're watching half of a Punisher show, guest starring Karen Page, and we've lost one of our main Daredevil characters. It's almost like they knew how strong Jon Bernthal was as the Punisher, and they wanted to keep him around. And the same problem with the Hand. We learn some significant things about the Hand, mostly that Elektra is the Black Sky, and that was mentioned in season 1. She's the ultimate weapon of the Hand. Makes total sense. She has to make a decision, much like Ron Perlman in Hellboy 1, of whether she's going to be this engine of destruction or if she's going to follow her own individual needs and wants. And they try to get her to kill Stick. It's slightly disappointing in the beginning of this episode because we leave last episode with what looks to be the final countdown with Stick and Elektra, which I was kind of hoping would be Elektra murdering Stick because it would be really powerful. And it immediately, you would get 5 minutes of, you know, choreographed kung fu sword fighting and Daredevil going, break it up, you two. And then the Hand shows up and then they all have to fight the Hand and then everybody's facing off against everybody. So we're at the point now where we're starting to tie things up plot-wise. We're starting to pay off our mysteries, but we haven't really built to a conclusion. And I don't know, maybe because I'm binging and I'm getting a little tired and I've watched 12 episodes in under 24 hours that I'm kind of like wanting to get to the end. Or honestly, it's because we're looking at the final episode now and I don't see us building to a climax. I see us just kind of capping stories off and tying them up. There's a lot of pressure on this final episode to pay off in a big way, the way Daredevil season 1 really did. My opinion, Jessica Jones didn't pay it off. If you don't mind spoilers for Jessica Jones, it came out, you know, months ago. But Jessica Jones, the thing that bothered me, and I said about it on the podcast, was kind of Jessica didn't know how to stop Kilgrave without killing him. And in the end of the series, she just kills him. So who cares? Like, you know, there wasn't a neat way out. There wasn't a clever way out. It was just, you know what? You are really bad. And now you're crossing the line and hurting people closer and closer and closer to me. So that's it. You're out. I'm worried that what we're going into is just kind of killing off the Hand. And Elektra gets away because Elektra's a major character. And then the Punisher story is kind of wrapped up. So does the Punisher storyline just fade? There is a nice moment when Punisher kills Blacksmith that Karen says, you know, if you do this, we're done. Then you are a monster and I'll have nothing to do with you. And that is a scene where an anti-hero, a darker hero, like a Daredevil or like a Batman, would walk up to the line and go, no, I can't kill because that would make me as bad as you. The Punisher is not that character. And the Punisher just says, I'm dead already, and kills Clancy Brown. And it's really true to who that is. And again, I've been saying this a lot through this podcast, which is why I don't think the Punisher is a hero, and which is why I'm loving him as a supporting character. And now that he's kind of become the hero of this second storyline, I'm not quite as interested. I wish I was more interested in the Hand, but I feel like the way we paced this season, the Punisher was very strong in the beginning. So I feel like the Punisher is the A plot, and the Hand didn't really surface until the middle of this season. I mean, Elektra didn't show up till the middle of the season. We didn't see the Hand at all. So part of me still feels like it's a subplot, because it came in late. It's never quite taken center stage. We've still been following Punisher in every episode that we've been following the Hand. And what bothers me is that what we're supposed to think is the B plot is more interesting, but it's starring the supporting character. And what's starring Daredevil just feels a lot flimsier, and it feels like the B plot. But you know, we got one more chance. We're at the last episode. So let's all watch it when you hear the music for Daredevil. By the way, if you haven't guessed it by watching the theme, this segues are your cue to stop if you haven't gotten to that episode yet. And it is the theme song to Daredevil. So every time you hear the theme song to Daredevil, that's your cue to go watch an episode that will have the theme song to Daredevil. So we're going to play the theme one more time, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk about episode 13, and we'll wrap up the entire series and think about what it means for the Netflix universe and maybe the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe. So let's do this last one. We're at the end. This is the 13th episode. This is the final episode of Daredevil Season 2. This is all we'll get from the Marvel Netflix universe until Luke Cage premieres on September 30th. So, all the questions I had going in, not all of them were resolved. There were a few things kind of left hanging. The Punisher story really petered out. It was... Well, he gets a cameo in this episode. After all we've done, it seems like the decision was to wrap up his story early because he's not the main character. But then all we really see is him build his arsenal from the blacksmith's compound, burn his own house down, and get a CD with what I guess is the confidential information that... proves his past, proves his innocence. But then he also spray paints the skull on his blackjack and his bulletproof vest, finally, which took 13 episodes, is not explained. There was a nice touch in a few episodes saying how he had suffered brain damage in the attack that killed his family, and they keep going back to the visual of the x-ray of his skull with a hole and right by his frontal lobe, which early on I thought that's a nice nod to the skull motif, is if he owned that. Because in the trial they were saying, oh well, he has this brain damage and that's what causes him to not know right from wrong, and that's why he's murdering. And it would be cool if he decided to own it and make that as part of his motif. But this episode doesn't really set it up. We just see him spray painted on there. And then when he does show up, he shoots a couple of hand ninjas and then like kind of waves at Daredevil and goes away, which is not a satisfying ending for this character. And it would be one thing if they were absolutely planning a Punisher series, but so far they are not. Or if Luke Cage is going to fight the Punisher, but at this point that would be redundant. We do get a Luke Cage trailer at the very end of the 13th episode. If you stick around, it will load a 20-second commercial for Luke Cage. We don't really see a lot of that. We don't know who his villain will be or what his plot will be. As for the resolution of the Hand, they still kind of seem B level. They're, you know, they all fight Daredevil and Elektra team up. We do get the classic Elektra death that we get in the Frank Miller of her being stabbed in the back with her own sigh. The one thing we don't have is Bullseye, which is the one thing that was done in the Daredevil movie that the TV show has not reintroduced and improved. Daredevil is the only character really involved from the Ben Affleck Daredevil movie that we haven't seen. Will he be a part of season three? I don't know. I don't know if there are plans for season three. Also, Bullseye is fairly close to Punisher. Punisher is a bigger name. He's a stronger force in the Marvel Universe. It's possible that having Bullseye would be a letdown after the Punisher without a real reason to differentiate them. And we end the entire series with two revelations. One of Matt Murdock revealing his identity to Karen, which was a plot point in the books. However, she figured it out. He never told her. But we had Foggy learn it in last season, so we have Karen learn it this season, which may or may not bring them together. We also had this weird turn of her becoming a reporter, which is a nice arc for the character, but she was a legal assistant all two seasons, of which she had no training. And in season one, it was okay. She was their first client and she stuck around. But now, because she was good at researching the clients, now she just has a job at a newspaper, which seems odd. It also seems odd that newspapers are hiring people in 2016, Marvel Universe or not. So overall, didn't quite come together for me. I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. Not as much as season one. I enjoyed it more than Jessica Jones. I enjoy it more than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter. I enjoyed Agent Carter a lot season one. Season two, I felt dragged, even though it was only 10 episodes. So Marvel television shows seem to have a problem with pacing, the network shows especially. But I am seeing it in these Netflix shows. I felt season one of Daredevil was very well paced, but both Jessica Jones and Daredevil felt a little long. Jessica Jones felt three episodes too long to me. Daredevil felt one. You know, it was episode 11. Felt like it was just marking time. It didn't really advance anything. Still love the performances. I have never talked about the costume. The costume has been updated. We mentioned I'm all alone here. In episode 3, he had that welding seam because it was fragile and broken. But he does get a new helmet, and it's slightly different. It's not as bulky. It is not as purple looking. It's more red, and it looks way closer to the actual Daredevil suit. It's kind of close to, say, Christian Bale's Batman mask in that it looks like the comic, but it feels like a hard, tactile helmet and not cloth that would be pulled over your head. I like it. It helps the suit as well. The suit kind of feels still big like a flak jacket, but not nearly as bulky as it had before. In season one, I thought Ben Affleck's Daredevil looked better than Charlie Cox. Now, I think that they're about the same. They carry the motif of the cinematic universe. His suit looks a lot like Captain America with the kind of rivets and padding and stitching. But I'm good with it. And in this episode, he actually gets his real billy club, which I hadn't noticed he hadn't really had, because through the series, he's been using whatever weapons can come to hand. But Melvin Potter designs a billy club, and we get a scene where he's like, look, it turns into nunchucks, and it turns into a grappling hook, and it turns into two. And he does a lot of cool stuff with it. He does the kind of daredevil-y stuff you'd want him to do with it. So we feel like after two seasons, he's completely graduated into the hero he is. We take a weird jump at the very end of this episode after the fight, where it's set up in the first episode that New York is having a heat wave and it's summer, but then we jump to Christmas. So assuming the whole season takes a couple of weeks, maybe a month, we jump ahead 6 months. There's a nice touch when we see Matt again is that he's covered in bruises. So it's a very subtle touch to tell us that he has not stopped being Daredevil, that that part of his life hasn't changed. He hasn't retired and decided to put it behind him. So we know that's an ongoing thing. Where it goes from here, who knows? I could easily see them closing up Daredevil now. I mean, we still have to do Luke Cage. We're going to do a second season of Jessica Jones. We have to do Iron Fist. Then we have to do Defenders. We've got a lot of shows coming. So my guess is, like Iron Man, we will see Daredevil next in Avengers, unless he makes a surprise cameo in one of the other shows. We had a surprise cameo from Carrie Ann Moss playing the same character she played in Jessica Jones. Again, doing that excellent job Marvel always does of tying things together without beholding you to continuity. You did not have to watch Jessica Jones for a second. You did not have to see the trailer for Jessica Jones to understand Daredevil, but it's these little touches that kind of bring out the world. We also don't get real overt messages to the cinematic universe. We, as I said, there is the sentiment of anti-vigilantism, which will certainly support Civil War that's coming up, but we don't talk about, say, Age of Ultron. We don't talk about Ant-Man. You know, we're not making nods to the most recent Marvel movies to get us in here, which is nice. As we always go back, Marvel tracks back to their publishing arm. And as I was watching The Punisher, I've started to think of all the decades of Punisher stories I've never read. I'm not up to speed of Punisher at all. As I said, talking about the last episode, that Daredevil, I've read some of the big runs, but there's decades that I don't know. Punisher, I read the Stephen Grant Mike Zeck mini, and I've read the first Garth Ennis volume, Welcome Back Frank. That's kind of it. I'm not a Punisher fan at all. Mentioned it a few times, but I'm not. So I realized there's decades. There was a period in the 90s where he had three monthly titles. That was as much as Spider-Man. So there was stories and stories and stories to pull from Punisher. I didn't need to know all that to watch this show and to understand who the character is. For the most part, I also don't need to know all that when I read Daredevil. I read the Mark Waid run now, which is just wrapped up. That's another run of Daredevil. But if the Punisher shows up in Spider-Man or Daredevil, I don't need to have read all his stories. And they do an excellent job in the cinematic universe of doing the same thing. Not only do you not have to watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you don't have to see Age of Ultron. You don't even have to watch Jessica Jones to get this. It would be good to watch Daredevil season one just to know who the Kingpin is when he arrives in his two episodes, which was incredibly welcome. I felt his presence elevated the entire series. It gave a sense of continuity, and it underscored that the Kingpin is the big bad in this universe. I would love it when we do the Defenders if Vincent D'Onofrio is a big part of that, because we are going around and around this area of Marvel's Manhattan, and I think Kingpin needs to get out of prison for Defenders, whether he's teamed up with someone we'll see in Luke Cage or Iron Fist. He won't be Kilgrave because they've killed him off. I think he can be a formidable opponent for everyone in this Netflix universe. And the two episodes of Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk in Kingpin completely solidified that. So that's Daredevil season two. This was an interesting experiment. Do me a favor and leave me a comment. Let me know what you thought of this. We have never done this in the show before, stopped and started the podcast for every episode. So I have been doing this podcast for about 30 hours, and you've been listening to it for about 58 minutes. If you liked that approach, send us a message, and it's something we can try again, maybe when Luke Cage comes out. I can't think of another show we would do this for. Obviously, shows like Gotham and Flash and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are on every week. So we won't be able to combine it into one show because we're not able to binge watch it. But if you want to leave me a comment, you can follow me at Not In My Book on Twitter and reply to me there, retweet something I've said about this podcast, leave me a message there. You can also leave a comment anywhere on our Facebook page, Caffeinated Comics. You can leave a direct comment on our iTunes page, Or you can leave us a comment on caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com, where you can listen to every episode of Caffeinated Comics for free forever. You can comment under the post for this podcast, Daredevil Season 2 cast, or any podcast that you listen to. Steven is wrapping up at C2E2. By the time you hear this, that show will be over. I think we'll talk about how that went. I'm going to try to get to it, but there's a lot of other things going on, one of which was watching 13 episodes of Daredevil the same weekend as C2E2. Next week will be Batman versus Superman. That is a fact. We're going to have to see this. We have very mixed feelings about this movie, but we are going to be there. We're going to see it. We're going to tell you what we thought of it. Anticipation is an understatement for the sentiments around this movie. So we'll talk to you about that next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Thank-